radioalburn.com.
Welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 3rd of January 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live at radioalbion.com. Well, I do have to apologise that we don't have Dennis Wise with us tonight. Hopefully he will maybe turn up later. He has missed a couple of shows before, so I don't think we should be too worried about it. Perhaps he's out enjoying New Year, and I would like to wish all our listeners a Happy New Year. I do have the notes with us from last week's episode, because we were only able to get through half of it, so if you bear with me, I'll go through some of these today. I'm not so used to actually doing the live shows on my own here. When you're talking with another host here, you've got a chance to have a break and have a think. You can mute yourself and have a glass of water, have a vape or whatever. And I won't be able to do that. I will just have to keep the show going on my own here. So do bear with me. But as I say, we've got some interesting topics here to get into, and they come from the comments that were left on Dennis's BitChute channel. Obviously, I'd rather have him here to discuss them with me, but hopefully I'll be able to handle them on my own. I know he would rather I stood in for him than you guys just had nothing to listen to but the backing music that we put on the radio server for when we're doing these shows. The first topic was actually sun worship that was brought up, an allegation maybe that the National Socialists were into some kind of sun worship, and I don't particularly think that white people were ever into sun worship. It seems to me to be something that the non-whites do, something that's associated with particularly with human sacrifice in the South of America, and I don't think white people were silly enough to look at something like the sun and think that was God. I think it was more a symbol for God, because it was like an eye in the sky. It shone on everybody, and it encouraged life from the plants, and we all need it in order to live. So it is like a symbol, like a reference for God itself. I don't think any of our ancestors actually thought that the sun was God. In actual fact, the black sun is a better symbol to actually use for the creator, because that's a light that no one can see, but it's a light that keeps everybody alive. The black sun itself is reminiscent of a verse in the New Testament which likens Christ to the light that no man can see, but that everybody requires to live. So I think when the National Socialists were having their solstice festivals, and when our ancestors had their solstice festivals and referred to the sun, it wasn't as if they were actually worshipping the sun itself. I know the Druids certainly didn't see the sun, the physical sun itself, as being some kind of god. So that was the first topic that came up. And the second topic that came up was the word Nazi, and where that came from. And obviously that's a bit of a derogatory term. The National Socialists didn't really call themselves that, but they did use it once on a medal that was struck for one of them. I'm not sure who it was. It may have been Goebbels, who went over to Palestine, and it was part of the Havarah Agreement, which was the agreement that the National Socialists had with the Jews, that one certain number of them could give all their possessions and their money to the National Socialists, and they would hold them, and then they would transport them over to Palestine, and then they would give them their possessions when they were actually over there. I forget right now the reason why it was held. It was something to do with them actually making some money from it, and the Jews making some money from it as well. And they would actually teach them farming, and that was it. The possessions would be changed up into things that they would need for being pioneers in Palestine, like farming goods and things like that. And the Havarah Agreement was an agreement that they had to basically help the Jews to emigrate over there. And I think it was Goebbels that went over there, and there was a medal struck for him, and it had the Jewish Star of David on one side of it, and on the other side of it, it had a swastika, and it had the word Nazi on it. And this was just a sort of medal that was struck for the occasion of him going over there. Sort of like, I guess maybe sort of like these coins that have been struck for Donald Trump because he changed the name of, not changed the name of it, but recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, that sort of thing. The governments like to have medals and coins struck for in important things. And I think that's the only time that the National Socialists actually referred to themselves as Nazi. Officially, of course, there was also that book by Goebbels, Those Damn Nazis, that we covered a couple of weeks back. But again, that was referring to the word Nazi as in that's the word that other people would call them, not the word that they would actually call themselves. And of course, there's a interesting link there with the word Ashkenazi, and you get the Ashkenazi Jews, which is obviously the name of the European looking Jews rather than the Middle Eastern looking Jews. And they were actually called Ashkenazi Jews because, according to their religious books, the Germans actually came from Ashkenaz, who was one of the sons of Japhet in the Old Testament. So because the Germans were called Ashkenaz, they called themselves Ashkenaz Jews because they were living in Germany. So this is where this word Ashkenazi actually came from. And also, I think the word Nazi itself is Hebrew for prince. But the National Socialists, obviously, it was National Socialismus. And if you take the first two letters of National and the first two letters of Socialismus, you end up with Nazi or Nazi. And I think the Allies liked to use it because it sounds similar to the word nasty, and they wanted to portray them in a negative light there. I'm just going to have a little look at the chat room, check everything's going on okay there. Yeah, it seems to be okay there. Nice to see Odessa in there, who we haven't seen for a while, and it's always good to see Anglo Falcon in there, who is, as far as I'm aware, he's been listening to us right since the first episode here. Getting back to these comments here, the next one we've got came from somebody called Chang Chun Hasayang, and he said, how can we define Russia nowadays? It seems Putin goes closely with the China Communist Party. And I would say looks can be deceiving. I mean, in China, they do call themselves communists, but they're not really international communists. I think if China was anything like the Bolsheviks or like Stalinist Russia, I don't think Putin would really have them as allies. I don't think Russia would want them as allies. But the China Communist Party today is very different. They're nationalists, basically. They are Chinese nationalists. They're all about increasing China's dominance in the world. And if you look at what they've actually done for the Chinese people, they have raised the Chinese people's living standards. Okay, 60, 70 years ago, you had Mao Zedong and the millions of people that he massacred. But that's not what's going on now. What's going on now is you've got something that's actually closer to National Socialism. And Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson has talked about this at length, and he points out that a lot of these countries that we look at as being socialist countries are closer to being national socialist countries because they're not interested in internationalism. What they are interested in doing is raising the living standards of their own people. A lot of the time they will refer to indigenous rights and things like that. And I'm thinking of, I think it's Bolivia there, where they talk about indigenous rights. And then you get the left who think that they must be talking about the rights of minorities there, and what they're actually talking about is the rights of the Bolivian people, because they are the indigenous people. I forget the name of the actual leader I'm trying to think of there. He's the one that's been just actually had to step down because another party has taken power almost in a sort of coup. But he was very popular. The name Evo Morales is coming to mind, but I may be getting that mixed up with someone else. So Putin is allied with China. He's also allied with Iran. He's basically allied with the countries that aren't a part of the globalist system, that aren't a part of the New World Order. And they basically form a balance to the American, Israel, EU axis, which is the other part of the world today. I mean, Putin talks about having a multipolar world, and he talks a lot about sovereignty of the sovereignty of other countries and not interfering, basically. I mean, if you look at him going into Syria, that was at Bashar al-Assad's request, unlike America, which just invaded. And Bashar al-Assad himself, he's been elected by the people, I think twice, three times. And the last time was while the war was actually going on, and he won by about 80%, 85%. So it's not like there weren't other people that were standing against him. So he's definitely the legitimate leader of Syria. And he asked Putin to come in with the Russian army to help him defeat ISIS. And if you look at what Putin says in the UN, he's always been pointing this out, that we shouldn't interfere and countries should be left to get on how they want to get on. You know, it's no good complaining that another country has bad human rights. What you should be doing is looking at your own country and improving the lot of your own people and leaving the other country to get on as best they can. And that is nationalism. I mean, Russia is a civic nationalist country. They do have different peoples there, not just Russians. It's not an ethno-nationalist country, but it is a civic nationalist country. He's pretty big on sovereignty, as old Putin. And we got a comment here from somebody called Odin's Rune, which I picked out because I thought this was pretty interesting. He says, Russians celebrate their victory over stopping Hitler from succeeding. I doubt that they celebrate the acts of the then Soviet army. Russia nowadays has become strong in their Orthodox faith, and thousands of churches have been built and rebuilt there. By the way, the Russians of the Soviet army were much more civilized with the German civilians, but it was the criminals that Stalin let loose from prison that caused much of the slaughter. They came with the second wave of the Soviet invasion. And I hadn't thought about that before, but it does make sense that Stalin would be letting these criminals out and sending them off there to fight against the Germans. I mean, we saw similar things happening in Syria, similar things happening in Libya, where they just let the prisoners out. I mean, Saudi Arabia apparently was saying to the prisoners that they had actually in Saudi Arabia, murderers, that they could be freed if they would go on jihad in Syria. And so you've got a similar thing happening there with Stalin letting these savages out, basically. And we know that we had a lot of Mongolian troops and troops from the Far East that were part of the second wave that made their way into Germany, the ones that were responsible for most of the rapes. And I mean, there is an inconsistency there, isn't there, with the way that the Russians celebrate their victory in the Second World War, when it wasn't really that much of a victory. If you look at what happened to the Russian people and everything that the Soviets were doing, you would think that they would look upon that as an absolutely terrible thing. But then what has Russia got to be proud of then, if you take that away from them? So I think that plays into it as well. And the Russians want to say, well, look, we won the Second World War. We had this huge, great victory, and we want to celebrate that, because you can't take that away from them. I mean, they lost a hell of a lot of people, millions of people that they lost in that war. A lot of people a lot of people starved, and a lot of the Russians themselves have got they've got grandparents that they want to honor, so they try to sort of look at it in a positive way. I mean, from what I've learned from Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, up until the beginning of last century, Russia was, you know, it wasn't a very industrialized country, and it had actually been held back by its leaders. And this is one of the reasons why Hitler was talking about, if we go into Russia and if we have Lebensraum there, we will build the country up, and it will be better for the Russian people, and the Russian people will become more advanced because they'll be able to make use of the technology that we have and the way that we build things. Because when they did go in there and they were fighting in there, as most of you listeners will be aware if you've seen Dennis's documentaries, the actual buildings that they lived in were more like wooden shacks. They weren't brick-built houses like they had in Germany. They were more like sheds, and the National Socialist Army didn't feel too bad about setting fire to them because of that, because they thought, well, it's not going to take them much to actually rebuild this, unlike the horrific damage that was caused by the terror bombing by the Allies. And the other part of this comment, which I'm sure most people are aware of, is this revival of Christianity that's taken place in Russia, this huge revival of the Orthodox Church, which the Soviets tried to stamp out. And they do try to, they do at least try to keep to Christian morality, particularly with the banning of the promotion of homosexuality to children. So I think the way to define Russia nowadays is an Orthodox Christian country, and that takes it seriously. It takes the fact that Russia is supposed to be the leading Orthodox country, and Metropolitan Kirill is the head of the Eastern Orthodox Church. They do take that very seriously. And you would imagine that if the Communist Party of China was still doing the sort of things that Chairman Mao was doing, or the sort of things that Stalin was doing, that the church would be condemning China for that. But they're not. So a lot of different things to think about there. I'll just have a quick look at the chat room again. Yeah, everything's going well there. If any of you guys there have got any questions or comments you'd like to make, or any subjects you'd like me to talk about, just put them in the chat room, because I will check that every couple of minutes or so. I think I'll just have a little break now, and then after that we're going to talk a little bit about Hitler's table talks, which is the next subject. But I need a little glass of water now, I think. So I'm going to play a tune for you. And this is a very apt song title. The song title is Truth Will Out. And the band's name is IC1. And they are from Britain.
We reject your left wing propaganda. It's all a pack of lies. We reject your socialist agenda and the red flags that you fly. We don't listen to your politicians, they're liars and corrupt. We reject their satellites and betrayal, they never spot for us. We reject corruption you've got to us for years. Truth without in the end. We reject your policies of failure, that's all that you've got left. We reject your Marxist revolution, property's not theft. You don't represent the aspirations of the working man. We reject your class war manifesto and your left-wing master plan. Your politics of envy have fallen on deaf ears. Truth will out, will out, will out, will out, yeah. We reject corruption, you've got thought to us for years. Truth without, in the end. We reject your left wing propaganda. It's all a pack of lies. We reject your socialist agenda and the red flags that you fly. We don't listen to your politicians. They're liars and corrupt. We reject their satellites and betrayal. They never spoke for us. Your politics have been there, you're falling on deaf ears. Truth will out, will out, will out, will out, yeah. We reject corruption, you've gone to us for years. Truth will out, will out, will out, will out, yeah. Your politics have been there, you're falling on deaf ears. Well out, well out, well out, well out, yeah. We reject corruption, you've got to us for years. Truth well out, in the end.
See one there from Britain, and the album's called Truth Will Out as well. I do believe that is a new album released recently, so do go and check that band out. Captain in the chat room is saying, could I mention William Joyce? And apparently William Joyce was hanged today, however many years back it was, 70 years, 75 years maybe, that he was actually hanged. He was Lord Haw-Haw. He was the guy that was making the propaganda for the Germans. He was an American citizen, born in America, and he came over to Britain, and he lived in Britain, and he joined up with Oswald Mosley. 74 years, I'm being told here. He joined up with Oswald Mosley, and I think just before the war broke out, he'd actually moved over to Germany, and he changed his citizenship to German citizenship. So he was actually a German citizen, and he was broadcasting once a week. He was broadcasting pro-German propaganda from Berlin in English. And at the end of the war, he was hanged for treason, even though he was a German citizen. It just seems that at the end of the war, they just threw all precedent out of the window. Everything to do with justice, law, honor, it just all went out of the window, especially when you think of the Nuremberg trials, where they weren't allowed to enter their own evidence. Hearsay evidence was allowed. They had thousands of just supposed witness testimony that nobody had actually checked to see whether it was the truth or not. And any evidence was allowed to be used if it would help to convict the people in the dock, regardless of whether it was believable, regardless of whether it was a fact at all. You had the so-called victims of the war, the people that had actually been carrying out the interrogations, because you had a lot of Jews that moved over to America, German Jews that moved over to America. They became American citizens, and they were the ones that were carrying out the interrogations on the Germans. And then they were also the prosecutor in the actual case against the Germans. Plus, you had the so-called victims, which was Russia, America, and Britain, and they were standing there as the judges. And you had the Soviets, who were actually responsible for the Kachin massacre, who tried to pin the blame for the Kachin massacre on the Germans. You had reports of the most awful torture that went on. Out of 139 people that were actually seen, only two of them still had testicles. The rest had all been smashed beyond repair. One of the American prosecutors actually left in disgust at what actually went on in that trial. I mean, that's just one example of it. And I say, and also you've got this hanging of William Joyce for treason when he wasn't even a British citizen. I mean, they could have hanged him for being a belligerent, I guess, or being high up in the German officialdom. But he wasn't high up in German officialdom. He was just producing pro-German propaganda. From Berlin, I think he was playing Charlie and his orchestra, which was really the first meme music that came out, swing music with jokey lyrics about Churchill and Roosevelt and the rest of them. And he does look a bit of a mean character, William Joyce, because he's got a scar on his cheek, which was I'm not sure if that was actually... Yeah, it was. It was the Antifa that slashed him with a razor. I was thinking of the scar on the cheek and getting him mixed up with one of the Axis war heroes who also had a scar on his cheek, but that was from fencing. So, yeah, a great shame that in victory we had to degrade ourselves and behave like that and break all our precedents and all our laws. I mean, you should be magnanimous in victory, not vindictive and mean and you know, torturing these guys to get these false confessions out of them. Because it means today that we look at what went on at that Nuremberg trial and we say, well, that cannot be proven. In actual fact, what this shows is that what we were told was the results of the Nuremberg trial. Probably the opposite of that happened. And people were pointing that out at the time, that this is going to hang around America and Britain's necks for years. This is an absolute disgrace. What has gone on here? So, you know, we are our own worst enemies when you think about it. Anyway, let's get into this comment that we've got here from BitChute Best for All, and it is Best for All. Do go and check out BitChute if you haven't done already. There's lots and lots of good content on there. All the content that you are now missing from YouTube is available at BitChute. And BitChute Best for All brings up table talks, Hitler's table talks, and Dietrich Eckart's Bolshevism from Moses to Lenin as proofs against Hitler's Christianity. Of course, we've argued a lot here that Hitler was a Christian throughout his life. He was a Catholic. He died a Catholic. Obviously, Dennis talks about it a lot and puts it into his videos a lot. And we've shown, I think, in the podcast that we've produced here, that the evidence for Hitler being a Christian is overwhelming, and the small amount of evidence to show that he isn't is just that. It's a very small amount of evidence, and it's all discredited when you actually look into it. And this table talks is one of the main things that get brought up as evidence that Hitler was anti-Christian. And I'll just point out that the proof for table talks normally rests on David Irving saying that he believes that table talks is genuine. And he bases it, I believe, on Hitler's talk about the maneuvers and the war things. And there are certain things in there that show that this information didn't come from the Allies after the war. But David Irving is not he would probably call himself a Christian. Maybe he wouldn't. But I doubt that he knows that much about Christianity. And when I first looked at table talks and I looked at what Hitler supposedly said about Christianity, I thought this is not Hitler's language. This is not the language that he used to talk about Christianity. He drew a distinction between Christianity, the religion and the faith, and the church. And in Hitler's table talks, there's no distinction there between that. Instead of criticizing the church, it's got Hitler criticizing Christianity. And that is a typical thing that anti-Christians will do. They will conflate the two. So that sort of tipped me off that this doesn't seem genuine to me. And also when you think that Hitler came up with the idea for positive Christianity, then why would he be rubbishing his own ideas? So this is what really tipped me off to it. But there's a website called No Beliefs, which goes into quite some detail as to why this is a discredited source. He says, those who deny Hitler as a Christian will invariably find the recorded table talk conversations of Hitler from 1941 to 1944 as incontrovertible evidence that he could not have been a Christian. The source usually comes from the English translation, which was made from a French translation, and the edition is by Norman Cameron and R. H. Stevens, with an introduction by H. R. Trevor Roper. The table talk has Hitler saying such things as, I shall never come to terms with the Christian lie. Our epoch will certainly see the end of the disease of Christianity. Now, both of those things are things that I could never imagine Hitler saying. I can never imagine him talking about the Christian lie or the disease of Christianity. I mean, this is a man who put biblical references and analogies on every other page of one of the chapters of Mein Kampf, the race and nation chapter. I remember looking them up one time, and in fact, I did a whole program about it. That is not the language that Hitler would be using. So continuing with this quote here, the problem with these anti-Christian quotes is that the German text of the table talk does not include them. They were made up by François Genoux, the translator of the French version, which is the very version that the English translations rely on. And what they're basically saying, there was a German text, there were two copies made, and there was a German text, and one of them was burned. The other German text was translated into French, and the French version had these anti-Christian bits in it, and then the English version was translated from the French. So they don't exist in the original German text. So why were they included? And we'll get into that now. Continuing, even if you believe the table talk included the anti-Christian quotes, nowhere in the talk does Hitler speak against Jesus or his own brand of Christianity. On the contrary, the table talk has Hitler speaking admirably about Jesus. Hitler did, of course, criticize organized religion in a political sense, as do many Christians today, but never in a religious sense. But the problems with using Hitler's table talk conversations as evidence for Hitler's apostasy are manifold. Number one, the reliability of the source. Hearsay and editing by the anti-Catholic Bormann. And that's because it was Bormann that was responsible for editing this, as we will see. Number two, the reliability of multiple translations from German to French to English. Number three, the bias of the translators, especially Genoux. Number four, the table talk reflects thoughts that do not occur in Hitler's other private or public conversations. Number five, nowhere does Hitler denounce Jesus or his own brand of Christianity. Number six, the anti-Christian portions of table talk does not concur with Hitler's actions for positive Christianity. And, you know, that's an important one there. It doesn't actually fit in with anything else that we do know that he said. And when you're looking at, you know, when you're looking at documents like this that were produced after the actual time itself, they're only of use if they confirm what was said at the time. And this is why, when you look at the Apocrypha, which is the extra bit to the Bible, it's included in some Bibles, it's not included in others. And you say, well, the Apocrypha is good, it tells us about the time, but if it tells us something that is opposing to what it tells us in the Bible, then you have to ignore that Apocrypha, because it's already been established that the Bible is correct, so you ignore the Apocrypha. And we've already established that what Hitler says in Mein Kampf is correct, and we've already established that the recorded speeches that we have, that we can see where he is speaking, we can see that those are correct. So if we then find another document which was published after Hitler's death, and it contradicts what we know for definite that he did say, then we have to question that document. And I'm not saying we should question all of table talks, but I do think that these anti-Christian bits were added. Perhaps it was just the wording that was changed. I mean, they could have changed the word establishment or establishment church, and they could have changed that and put Christianity there. That could have been it. But it does seem that the person that is most likely to have been responsible for it was Bormann. Getting back to this quote here. Not one of Hitler's table talk conversations were recorded or captured by audio film or broadcast on radio. However, Hitler reluctantly allowed Martin Bormann to pick stenographers, Heim and Piker, to record conversations for the Table Talks book. In a facsimile written after the last of Hitler's recorded Table Talks, Bormann wrote a directive that stated, "Please keep these notes most carefully, as they will be of very great value in the future. I have now got Heim to make comprehensive notes as a basis for these minutes. Any transcript which is not quite apposite will be rechecked by me." And it's in highlighted there. Any transcript which is not quite apposite will be rechecked by me. And apposite means fitting, suitable, or appropriate. So what exactly does Bormann mean by rechecked? However, it bears importance here that neither Heim nor Bormann could hardly be in a position to determine what deems apposite, considering Bormann's biased views against Catholicism. Martin Bormann served as the instigator, fuel, and reason for the perception of many Christians that National Socialism was against Christianity. Many times, quotes attributed to Hitler are actually Bormann's. It is well known that Bormann secretly worked against the Catholic religion behind Hitler's back and without his permission. It has been pointed out that the fight against the church organizations was Bormann's pet project. In spite of Bormann's repeated attempts to persuade Hitler to act against the churches, Hitler insisted that there has been no official party announcement, nor will there be one. So Bormann definitely had an axe to grind against Christianity, and what he's saying there is any of these transcripts which he doesn't think are getting the appropriate message across are going to be changed by him. And we do get more confirmation of that later on. And now let's have a look at the two stenographers here. Two scribes recorded Hitler's conversations at the appointment of Martin Bormann. One was recorded by a civil servant in the Reich Ministry of Justice, Heinrich Heim, from 5th of July 41 to 20th of March 42. Later, from 21st of March 42 until 31st July 42, it was taken by Dr. Henry Piker. The record, whether taken by Heim or Piker, was then passed to Bormann. Bormann made two copies of his record. One of these was kept in the Führerbau in Munich and was burnt at the end of the war. The other was sent to the Berghof at Berchtesgaden and came ultimately into the hands of Genou. It is this second copy of which the volume of Hitler's Table Talk was translated. Moreover, Dr. Piker already regarded his own recording as authentic and insisted that no confidence can be placed in Bormann's editing of it. Indeed, he writes rather testily of Bormann's alterations not authorized by me. Unfortunately, we do not have the unaltered version of Dr. Piker's or Heim's recordings. So the guy that was actually writing this, the stenographer that was actually taking down verbatim, word for word, what Hitler was saying, is pointing out here that Bormann has edited his notes and is saying that no confidence can be placed in Bormann's editings of it. They were not authorized by him, and it's down to Bormann. So he's telling us there that they were altered, and yet we've still got these anti-Christians that will use this discredited book to try and say that Hitler was against Christianity. Now, I'm not saying all of the book is discredited, but certainly the bits that are anti-Christian have been changed to reflect what Bormann wanted to show rather than what Hitler's actual views are. Now, I'm getting a bit of a dry throat here, so I think I'm going to have to play a little bit of music again. Again, I think we'll have a British band here. This is Brutal Attack with It's Always Too Late.
It's always the same old story. We're always too late. It's for you.
British band. Well, the next book that was brought up was Bolshevism, From Moses to Lenin. And this is often used to show that Adolf Hitler was anti-Christian, and a lot of the stuff that's in it is often used by pagans. It makes mention of Joseph being the bad guy, and apparently Joseph ripped off lots of people, and it was usury that he was using, and he was taxing the countries around him, all these poor white countries, and he was this foreigner that took over Egypt, and that's the story that the pagans will tell you. However, if you actually read what it says in the Old Testament, Joseph was responsible for saving the lives of all the Egyptians, saving the lives of all the countries around him, and he did that through his farming skills. Farming skills is not something that Jewish moneylenders are known for, and he actually used the fact that the other countries around him were needing food to win back the lands for the Egyptian people, because those were lands that were originally belonging to the Egyptians. So through his farming skills, he managed to save the Egyptian empire, and he saved the countries around him, and he also won them back for the Egyptians. It's a different story when you actually look at what it says in the Old Testament to what Eckhart says about it. And I can also remember a German saying that at the time, and he actually produced evidence for this on his website. I don't think his website's there anymore. It was a good few years ago now. And it was actually a circular that was going around saying that there's a book which has been faked, basically, and it's not actually Hitler in it. It's not Hitler speaking, and people should be avoiding it. And he was pointing out that the book that was being referred to was this Bolshevism From Moses to Lenin. So I don't think it had that good a reputation, even at the time when it was produced. This is what Wikipedia had to say about it. In 1925, Eckhart's unfinished essay, Bolshevism From Moses to Lenin, Dialogue Between Hitler and Me, was published posthumously. And again, remember, this, it was published after he had died, and it was unfinished when he wrote it. It was published posthumously, although it has been shown that the dialogues were an invention. The essay was written by Eckhart alone. So the conversation with Hitler was a complete invention. That wasn't Hitler's words. This book was not endorsed by Hitler. However, this book still remains a reliable indicator of Eckhart's own views. The historian Richard Steigman Gall quotes from Eckhart's book, "In Christ, the embodiment of all manliness, we find all that we need. And if we occasionally speak of Baldur, a god in Norse mythology, our words always contain some joy, some satisfaction, that our pagan ancestors were already so Christian as to have an indication of Christ in this ideal figure." And Steigman Gall concluded that far from advocating a paganism or anti-Christian religion, Eckhart held that in Germany's post-war tailspin, Christ was a leader to be emulated. And of course, the problem with what Eckhart was promoting there was he was saying that we should get rid of the Old Testament. And this was actually a problem that the National Socialists had. They had the right idea with positive Christianity and trying to remove any of the heresy of Judaizing from Christianity, but they made the mistake of thinking that the Old Testament was a Jewish book, which it isn't, not by any standard. I mean, even if you hold to the idea that today's Jews are somehow related to the Israelites of the Old Testament, today's Jews only use the first five books of the Old Testament. And they don't actually use them for study, they just have them in a scroll that stays on the wall of the synagogue. The books that they study are the Talmud. They have two Talmuds, they have the oral Talmud and the written Talmud. And the written Talmud is the Old Testament that they say, and this is what their actual rabbis say, that is for women and children to read. And the oral version that was supposedly handed down secretly to Moses on the mountaintop and whispered in his ear, that's the actual Talmud. And that's the collection of books which, you know, it's still growing, but it wasn't actually written down until the 5th century. 5 centuries after Christianity and the New Testament, the Talmud was actually written down. And that's what the Jews follow. They don't follow the Old Testament. In actual fact, they mock and ridicule and desecrate the figures of the Old Testament. I mean, particularly Isaiah. You will often see anti-Christians using quotes from Isaiah to try and say that this is what the Jews are doing. But in the Talmud, it says that the Jews sawed the prophet Isaiah in half for speaking evilly about Israel. So this was a mistake that Eckhart made. He was knocking the Old Testament, and that was a mistake that the National Socialists made, and it's actually called Marcionism. It's a very old heresy, that one, suggesting that the Old Testament should be removed, that the Old Testament has a mean God and the New Testament has a loving God. In actual fact, it's the same God throughout both, and you need the Old Testament because that's the one that's got all the laws in it and the political ideas, and the New Testament is about the fulfillment of the prophecies in the Old Testament. You also need the Old Testament to show the veracity of the New Testament and the truth of Christ, because he was prophesied in the Old. So Bolshevism from Moses to Lenin, it's discredited that was actually Hitler in that. And it was the historian Richard Steigman Gall who points that out. As I say, it even says it on Wikipedia. And Wikipedia will do anything it can to promote Hitler as the bad guy and an anti-Christian. So the fact that they admit that this essay was written by Eckhart alone and it doesn't represent Hitler's views, it's not Hitler that's being recorded there, the fact that they actually say that means that there must be overwhelming evidence to show that, because I'm sure they would love to show Hitler as being anti-Christian. And just to finish up with here, again from this website, I forget the title of it. Let me just scroll up, see if I've got that there. Yes, No Beliefs. It's actually called. It's an atheist website, not a pro-Christian website. And they've got some more quotes about Hitler's Christianity that are not taken directly from Hitler, but taken from people at the time. Because if the anti-Christians and the pagans are going to take what other people supposedly said at the time, then maybe we should have a look at what some of the Christians had to say about him at the time. The established Methodist church paper, the Friedensglocke, vouched for the authenticity of a story about Hitler where he invited a group of deaconesses from the Bethel institutions into his home at Obersalzberg. The deaconesses entered the chamber and were astonished to see the pictures of Frederick the Great, Luther, and Bismarck on the wall. Then Hitler said, "Those are the three greatest men that God has given the German people. From Frederick the Great I have learned bravery, and from Bismarck statecraft. The greatest of the three is Dr. Martin Luther, for he made it possible to bring unity among the German tribes by giving them a common language through his translation of the Bible into German." Note that Hitler's own words about his admiration for Martin Luther are expressed in Mein Kampf. One sister could not refrain from saying, "Herr Reichskanzler, from where do you get the courage to undertake the great changes in the whole Reich?" Thereupon Hitler took out of his pocket the New Testament of Dr. Martin Luther, which one could see had been used very much, and said earnestly, "From God's word." And it's got the reference there, Helmreich, page 139. And that confirms what I believe. As I was saying earlier, the amount of references that he puts to the Bible in Mein Kampf show that this is somebody who is very, very well read in biblical verse. And he's using analogies that come straight out of the pages of the Bible that you wouldn't know unless you had read the Bible and has studied it yourself. It's not like he's saying, "I'm quoting from this chapter here and this is the verse." He's just actually using it as part of his conversation. He's using these analogies and these quotes and just using them in general conversation in Mein Kampf, which shows that he was very well acquainted with the literature itself, and also his understanding of things such as the original sin, and using that as an analogy for race mixing and miscegenation. Again, that shows quite a deep understanding of what's actually going on there. It's not somebody who doesn't know about this stuff. It's somebody who does know about it. I think Dennis has shown that originally he wanted to be a priest, and where he first saw the swastika would have been at his local church. And you can look it up on Google Images, and you can see this swastika there at the abbey. You know, no matter what they say, where he got the idea for it from, you know, that would have been the first place that he saw it, because he would have seen it when he was about 5, 6, 7 years old, when he first walked through into Sunday school. Continuing with these quotes here, even the Cardinal Faulhaber of Munich, who visited Hitler at his mountain retreat in Obersalzberg, confessed, "Without a doubt, the Chancellor lives in faith in God. He recognizes Christianity as the foundation of Western culture." And again, that's from Helmreich, page 279. And this comes from a reputable Christian source of the day, a cardinal, no less. Also on Hitler's allegiance to his true Christian spirit, and this comes from Wagner in Hitler, Memoirs of a Confidant, he says, "I do not remember even a single occasion when Hitler gave any instructions that ran counter to the true Christian spirit and to humaneness." And, you know, a lot of people will say, well what about his laws against the Jews? And, you know, the laws that they made against the Jews were no different to the laws that the Catholic Church made about the Jews, saying that they should be kept separate from the Christians. They had different laws to the Christians, and if they were allowed to live among the Christians, then they would corrupt the Christians. So the best place was, you know, they weren't saying, well, we're going to kick them out, they can't live here. They were saying, well, the best thing to do is for them to have their own area, and we'll have our own area. And that was, their area was called the Pale, which is where we get the phrase beyond the pale from, which means something that is beyond common decency. And again, it shows us that the Jews have always been involved in things that we thought weren't quite decent, right up until now, where instead of keeping to our morals, we've decided that we're just going to allow all forms of degeneracy under the guise of tolerance. When you think about Hitler's ruling that the Jews had to identify themselves by wearing a yellow star. Again, that goes back to the church. The church said that Jews had to wear an identifiable piece of clothing to identify the fact that they were Jews to the people that they were around, so that people would be aware that if they were engaging in business transactions, that the person they were engaging in the business transaction was a Jew, because they did have a tendency to rip the Gentiles off, basically, which is what they're encouraged to do in the Talmud. It's not like it goes against their religion. They're told that that's what we're here for, basically, is for them to rip off. I mean, there's plenty of websites about that show you these verses from the Talmud. And this idea that the Jews had to wear special clothing, I mean, that went on for hundreds of years. Again, you can look on Google Images and you can see them wearing pointy hats. That were, at one time, it was a pointed hat that they had to wear. And of course, that's where we get this idea from, that witches wear pointy hats, because it was the Jews that used to have to wear their pointed hats. The Nuremberg race laws that say that Jews and Germans can't marry, that goes back to the Catholic Church as well. They made a law saying that Jews couldn't marry Christians. I think that was one of the first laws that the Catholic Church made. We didn't have any laws against Jews until we had Christianity. It was after Constantine the Great decriminalized Christianity in the Roman Empire that the church had enough power to start making laws. And the first laws that it made were that Jews couldn't employ Christians. They couldn't have Christian slaves because they mistreated the Christian slaves. And the next one was that Jews couldn't marry Christians. Jews couldn't engage in usury. Eventually, they said that they couldn't hold public office or teaching, and they couldn't be put into positions where they could cause harm, basically, for the benefit of the Jews and the benefit of us. Because if the Jews were allowed to cause harm, then what would happen is the Gentiles would eventually get fed up of it. They'd have enough, and they'd go and they'd burn down the moneylender's house and burn all the receipts there that he had of the money that he was expecting to own, and they would chase the Jews out of town. So it was of no benefit to the Jews to allow them to rip off the goyim in the way that they did. And it was of no benefit to the Gentiles either, because they would end up losing their farmland. They would end up losing their implements. So they would get a loan and they wouldn't be able to pay the loan back. And a lot of the time the loan would be for alcohol, where the Jews had been making vodka or whatever out of potatoes. And the Jew would say, well, put down your plow and your ox as security on the loan. And he would lend him the alcohol, and the Jew would end up taking the plow and the ox. And then he'd say, don't worry, I'll still lend you some more money, and you'll have to put down your farmhouse and your farmland now. And of course, the poor peasant would end up losing everything. And then the blowback from that was that the peasants would rise up in a pogrom. And the church realized all of this and put these things in place to protect the Jews and to protect the Christians. It was called Sicut Judaeus Non, which I'm sure some of you listeners have probably already heard of, because Dr. E. Michael Jones talks about that a lot too. Anyway, I hope I've shown you that Adolf Hitler was a Christian, and that those two sources, the Eckhart source and the Table Talks source, are both discredited for suggesting that he wasn't a Christian. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. Hopefully we will have Dennis back next week for more Truth Without Radio. And of course, I do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.
RadioAlbion.com